The school system messed all of us up. The school system that we grew up in taught all of us that we had to be the smartest person in the room. We had to memorize everything. We had to have the answers for everything. We had to write the exams and tests by ourselves. In business, that's not true. In business, you can collaborate. You can use shortcuts. You can find the cheat sheets. You can get other people to do the work for you. You can hire other people to do all your work and you don't have to do any of it. And now you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You have to know how to find the smart people for the least amount of money to do the work for you, because it needs to get done, but not by you.
This is ScaleX Insider, and I am Brendan McGurgan. My purpose is to inspire, connect, and enable other ambitious leaders of high growth potential businesses to scale with purpose. Sadly, only 2% of businesses achieve scaling. So every week in this season, we bring together fresh insights from leaders around the world, authors, thought leaders, and those who have been there and done it. Each guest will speak to one or more of the 10 timeless principles of scaling from our ScaleX 10 Principle Framework. Today, I'm delighted to introduce Cameron Hurlds. Known by many leaders as the business growth guru, Cameron Hurlds is a top business consultant, best-selling author, and speaker. He's the mastermind behind hundreds of companies' exponential growth, and he's touched thousands of businesses indirectly through his work. At age 21, he had 14 employees. By 35, he'd helped build his first two $100 million companies. At the age of 42, Cameron had engineered 1-800-GOT-JUNK spectacular growth from $2 million to $106 million in revenue in just 6 years. His companies landed over 5,200 media placements in those same 6 years, including coverage on Oprah. Not simply a theory guy, Cameron teaches what he knows from experience and is passionate about sharing his expertise with today's most dynamic business leaders. He's a best-selling author and has published 5 books, including The Miracle Morning, Double Double, Meetings Suck, Free PR, and one of my go-to books, Vivid Vision. According to Cameron, vision statements don't work. And for those business leaders listening today that think they just need to update or review their vision statement, Cameron Hurlds would recommend you flush it down the toilet and start again. So some things to listen out for today: how to use the vivid vision concept to help make your dreams happen, the importance of creating a vision to inspire people to get involved, why you should focus on the who and not the how when it comes to executing, and what characterizes Elon Musk's brilliance and how he has used vision to great effect. Again, another wonderful episode with Cameron. I invite you to grab a cup of coffee, a notepad and pen, and enjoy the show. Cameron, you're very welcome to the ScaleX Insider podcast. I'm really thrilled to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Brendan. Appreciate it. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Look, I want to acknowledge up front, you have been a fantastic supporter of everything we've been doing over the last couple of years. And I really appreciate that. You know better than most that our vision is to inspire, connect, and enable millions of ambitious leaders of SMEs to scale with purpose. So I always open the show and ask all of our guests, what does scaling with purpose mean to you, Cameron?
To me, it was actually very much popularized by Simon Sinek. So Simon has the number 3 TED Talk of all time. He wrote the book Start With Why. Simon was on our board of advisors 4 years before he wrote his book. So I was very blessed to be around this idea of core purpose and understanding your why. And it's being completely aligned with what gets you out of bed in the morning and why you do what you do. And Simon actually helped me understand my why back in 2007, so 3 years before his TEDx talk. And my why, my core purpose, has been the same since 1986, has been to help entrepreneurs make their dreams happen. I love helping entrepreneurs make their dreams happen, which is my Vivid Vision book, all 5 of my books, my coaching, my COO Alliance, my Invest in Your Leaders course. Everything I do helps entrepreneurs make their dreams happen, and it allows me to say no to things. So saying yes to be on your podcast is a slam dunk because that's all you do. But if you worked, let's say your podcast or your mastermind group was related to government or big business or manufacturing, I'd say, nope, not interested. But when it's entrepreneurs, it's a hell yes. So that's what core purpose really is for me.
Brilliant. And yeah, I always say vision drives decision. So when you have an understanding, you know, of your purpose and vision, then ultimately you can determine what you rule in and what you prioritize, and also importantly, what you rule out.
I see every business like a jigsaw puzzle, right? And the front of the box of the jigsaw puzzle is your vivid vision. And then the first corner of your jigsaw puzzle is your core purpose. But if we don't know where we're going and it's not aligned with our core purpose, what's the point?
Yeah, completely. Look, and the second principle of her book, which you kindly contributed to, is purpose and vision. And I didn't have the opportunity or the privilege of meeting with Simon Sinek, but he certainly was one of the inspirations of how I started to consciously think about purpose. But you referenced your wonderful book, Vivid Vision. And this, I know I reference a lot of books on this show, but this is a go-to, and it's a go-to for the participants on our program. So I would like to do a little mini masterclass on the Vivid Vision today, Cameron, but let's kick off. What inspired you to write this in the first place? Where did the concept, what's the origins of the concept?
Yeah, well, the origins of the concept is actually an Olympic coach that I met with 20 years ago, actually 24 years ago now. And there was 120 entrepreneurs in Vancouver, Canada, that were all a part of the entrepreneurs organization. We were invited down to a mastermind lunch. Only 16 of us showed up. And it was probably the most profound business lesson of my career. So 104 entrepreneurs missed out by not attending the mastermind. The Olympic coach talked about sports psychology and how athletes will visualize themselves performing the event, and how they'll roll themselves through the event over and over and over in their mind so they can literally see themselves and feel themselves performing. And he said, if we could take that into the business world and use the same strategy of visualization, we could win. So I thought about businesses that used visualization, and it was home builders, contractors, right? When you're building a home, the homeowner is really the CEO of the project. The leadership team is really the contractor who's going to figure out the plans to make the vision come true. And the employees have to understand the plans and the vision to be aligned and inspired and know what to build. So that's where the concept came from, was Olympic athletes, sports psychology. And then I brought it through to the business world.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful concept. The challenge I always see with business leaders is that they don't take the time to craft a vision. Now, a lot of people will be familiar with vision statements. Mm-hmm. Can you open this out and explain the difference between your classic or traditional vision statement, the one or two lines, and the vivid vision?
You know, it's funny. We all know vision statements suck, right? The traditional one-sentence mission statement, you get all your favorite employees in a room, you all put your favorite words up on a whiteboard, you vote on which are your favorite words. You're left with six great words and you put them into one big sentence, right? That's your mission statement. Go team. It feels cheesy and it doesn't explain the company. It doesn't explain customer service. It doesn't explain your marketing. It doesn't explain your leadership team or your office culture, your environment, the way that you lead people. It leaves too much out. And the entrepreneur usually has a bit of a story or a movie playing in their mind. You know, they know what they're trying to build. The entrepreneur can see everything they're working towards, but they don't realize that no one can read their mind. And so the entrepreneur spends all this time trying to align people and hold them accountable and inspire them. Well, if they would just share the vision, right? If we could get the movie out of our mind and write a 4 or 5 page description of what our company looks like, acts like, and feels like in the future, then all our employees, our customers, our suppliers, our potential employees, our potential customers, everybody could see what we could see. Everyone would be completely aligned and inspired and be able to make the decisions like we would make. So it's the problem is the entrepreneurs just don't get it out of our head. Very similar, by the way, if I was a homeowner and I wanted to build a home and I hired you, Brendan, to be my contractor, and I said, here's $2 million, build me my dream home. And then I left. You'd be like, well, fuck, is it a four-story home? Is it a ranch style? Is it modern? Is it a craftsman style? Is it a, like, I don't, is there guest houses? How many kids does he have? Like, you don't have enough information. I'm like, build me my dream home, Brendan. You're like, I don't got enough here. That's the problem. And then I'd keep coming back to the job site. Why are you doing this? You're like, I don't know, because I don't have enough information.
Yeah. And the analogy of building your dream home, well, it's something very, very relevant for myself. I did that 7 years ago. And again, I had been traveling the world as we were scaling up our previous business, and I took pictures in hotel rooms and, you know, houses that I was passing, of timber that I liked, of block work. And, you know, I created a view, a vision of what I wanted for the house. And I went to the architect, he brought that to life. And then that inspired a team of contractors, a specialist team of contractors who wanted then to be involved in the project. And
totally.
Why do so many entrepreneurs do this for their home, even do it for their car? You can custom build your car now and choose, but they have a different mindset when it comes to dreaming about the company that they would love to work in.
Well, it's partially because we've been, the only education we ever really had on growing companies were from professors or people that have never grown companies. So they're telling us the best ideas they have, but they've never actually done it. Much like if I was going to tell you how to build a dream home and I've never built one, thanks for the theory, but what's the real experience? So when you sit down, and I've worked with entrepreneurs now in 26 countries, right? My COO Alliance, I've got members from 17 countries. So I've been working with entrepreneurs all over the world. And when I'm around that many entrepreneurs from that many regions, I begin to see the similarities. And that's what we've been missing, is getting the vision out in a way that people understand it in enough detail that they can make the decisions. But all we had up until now was a vision statement, right? That one sentence vision statement. This is what's been missing, is that whole, you know, the core purpose was good, start with why. But if I just said, help entrepreneurs make their dreams happen, it still doesn't explain my company, right? It doesn't explain what my business looks like. It doesn't explain how I treat people, or, you know, there's so many other missing pieces.
So let's get into that a little bit. You know, we've talked about the vivid vision. For those who haven't heard the concept or may not have seen your wonderful TED talk around the concept, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, Cameron, can you explain to people what that vivid vision looks like in practice?
Yeah. So the vivid vision ends up being a 4 or 5 page written description of what your company looks like, acts like, and feels like 3 years in the future without explaining how you're going to make it come true. You know, much like if I was going to build a dream home, I'm not going to tell the contractor how to do the electrical or how to do the plumbing or how to put up the cabinets. I don't know how he's going to do it, but I need to know that he understands what it's all going to look like. So the entrepreneur's job is to create enough of a rough draft, a mind map, 3 or 4 bullet points describing every area of your company, 3 or 4 bullet points describing your customer relationships and your employee relationships, and your supplier relationships, 3 or 4 bullet points related to your, you know, the energy and the culture inside of your company, 3 or 4 points about how you work with hybrid teams and remote teams, all of these rough bullet points. The jobs of the entrepreneur is to pull all those points together and then hand that to a copywriter. And a copywriter can polish it and make it pop off the page. The entrepreneurs often get stuck, one, trying to figure out how to make it come true. It's not the plan. Just describe the future, only 3 years out, not 10 years out. And second, they get stuck trying to write something that sounds great. Well, don't. Just write something that sounds okay so that a copywriter can polish it and they can make it sound great.
There's a number of things in that I want to pick up on. One is the time frame. And you're very intentional, very deliberate about the time frame. In the book, you mentioned the 3 years, which you've referenced there again. Why 3 years?
Because if you go out 10 years, you kind of fall over, right? You tip over. You're too far out there. And if you only go 1 year out, it's too similar to today, right? It doesn't provide enough friction because your business looks too similar to what it already looks like to be exciting, right? But if you lean out 3 years, it's far enough. And your team is only going to do the plan for 1 year out, right? So you're thinking about the business 3 years out, but you plan and you operate 1 year out. And then after 1 year, you do the second year plan. And then after 2 years, you do the third year plan. Right. As you're approaching the end of the 3 years, you do your next 3 year vivid vision.
It's often said that we overestimate what we can achieve in 12 months, but grossly underestimate what we can achieve in 3 years. So it's something that we have followed and seen huge benefits. And certainly a friend, a common friend of both of ours, Sebastian Tundur of MCI, I'd interviewed Sebastian for the book, and he compliments the process of the vivid vision in relation to his own success of scaling significantly. Do you want to share with the listeners some of the work that you did with Sebastian, without breaching any confidence in terms of just the process of bringing the Vivid Vision to MCI?
Yeah, so Sebastian Tondeur is an entrepreneur that I met in 2007. And we were going to a program together at MIT hosted by the Entrepreneurs Organization. It's called the Entrepreneurial Masters Program. And I was a class member and teaching the group. And I taught the group about this concept of the Vivid Vision. Sebastian's company was at the time around $100 million in revenue. And he leaned out 3 years later to 2009 and described his company as doing $500 million in revenue. So that's a huge jump in 3 years to go from 100 to 500 million. And he described in such detail how MCI Global, which is a meeting and planning company, would become global, operating in multiple countries, how they would build its brand and team, and described it in such vivid detail that his leadership team got super excited. He was able to start acquiring companies in different regions because they were excited about being a part of this brand. Because of that excitement and the way that they felt like they fit into this overall picture, he ended up executing. He ended up doing about $506 million and had $120 million EBITDA 3 years later. So he then leaned out to 2012, describing his company as $1 billion in revenue, which he ended up missing. He ended up only getting to around 800 million. But pretty amazing to go from 100 million to 800 million over the course of 6 years. And he was only about 36 years old at the time. This Vivid Vision concept works for every size company. It works if you're a $2 million business, a $20 million business, or a $200 million business. It's about getting clarity so that people are excited about what you're building. They can see what you're building. They can see how they can be a part of what you're building. They can start making decisions aligned with what you're building. And then it ties in with your core purpose and your BHAG and your core values, so that they really have the decision-making power to help make your dreams come true.
Let's just take those components of successful businesses, a BHAG, the culture, the values. How does all of that come together and integrate with the Vivid Vision?
So think of it like a jigsaw puzzle, right? The four corners of your jigsaw puzzle. So the picture on the front of the box, right? If I handed you a jigsaw puzzle with 1,000 pieces, you need to see the picture on the front of the box. I'll tell you, the worst jigsaw puzzle I've ever been given was 1,000 pieces and they were all red. So I had no idea what the picture was. The picture didn't help me. And that's what most entrepreneurs are building, is a jigsaw puzzle where no one can see the picture. Okay, so the Vivid Vision is your picture on the front of the box. The four corners of your jigsaw puzzle, right? We all know you go for the corner pieces first, then you go for the side pieces, then you do all the big shiny pieces in the middle. That's how you build a jigsaw puzzle. The four corner pieces are your core purpose, right? Your why you exist. Mine is to help entrepreneurs make their dreams happen. Then your second core or corner of your jigsaw puzzle are your core values. My core values are deliver what you promise, be open and vulnerable, show respect for everyone, grow big, act small, and have some effing fun. And then the third corner of your jigsaw puzzle is your BHAG. My big, hairy, audacious goal, which is a Jim Collins term, is to Vivid Visions replace vision statements worldwide. That's my BHAG. So everything I do drives. So that's another hell yes to being on your podcast or your mastermind. It's, if we're going to talk about Vivid Visions, yes. If we're going to infect all these entrepreneurs with the idea and help them write them, hell yes. And then the fourth corner of the jigsaw puzzle is your one-year plan that helps make your Vivid Vision come true.
Yeah, I love that. There's so much clarity in that. So the BHAG concept, for those who aren't familiar with it, the Big Hurry Audacious Goal, that's your guiding North Star, the direction of travel. The Vivid Vision then brings it much nearer term in 3 years with much more pixelation. Something you refer to in the book, again, I'd like you to explain this to the listeners, is the concept of reverse engineering from the future rather than simply going with kind of 78% growth on what we've seen historically. So
I actually thought I coined the term reverse engineering. It turns out I didn't. It turns out it is a term. So for me, what it meant was, if I lean out into the future and I know where I'm going, I can then work backwards towards where I am now and have the most efficient path to get there. And then I can execute on that plan. Much like, let's say that I was in, you know, Ireland, and I'm sitting in Dublin and I want to drive to Sligo. Well, Sligo is the end result. And then I'm going to reverse engineer that path. I'm going to look at Sligo and see, what are the cool cities close to Sligo on the way back towards Dublin? What little sites do I want to see? What pubs do I want to stop at? And then all of a sudden I've created my path or my route, and then I just start driving the route towards Sligo. You know, very similar to hosting a dinner party. If I know I'm going to have 12 people come to my home tonight for dinner, or let's say I want to have a dinner party tomorrow, 12 people coming, who should I invite? What kind of a song playlist should I build? Should I prepare dinner? When do I prepare dessert? What food allergies? So I think about all the stuff that needs to happen, and then I organize it backwards. I'm not going to start by putting dessert on the table. I should at least think about who's coming, where are they sitting, food allergies. Like you think about all the stuff and you build a logical path back to today. And then I go to the grocery store and I start buying everything, and then you build towards the end result again. So I just think about everything from the back, from the end back to the start, much like a jigsaw puzzle. What's it look like? You know, what are the sides? That's all you do.
And that's certainly a trip I want to be on, Cameron. So let me know whenever you're going on that trip. Something you referenced earlier, and this is, I see this with my own work with CEOs, that we constantly get brought back to the how. So they're challenged with actually dreaming. And when we think that imagination is one of the highest mental faculties that distinguish us from all other mammals, we tend not to use this. So let's just open this out first. Where best to actually go, or what's the process to actually starting to think about this wonderful business in the future? What do you recommend or advocate?
Well, I want to actually talk about something about the how part as well, because you kind of mentioned that, and I think we may have just missed a huge opportunity there. The school system messed all of us up. The school system that we grew up in taught all of us that we had to be the smartest person in the room. We had to memorize everything. We had to have the answers for everything. We had to write the exams, tests by ourselves. In business, that's not true. In business, you can collaborate. You can use shortcuts. You can find the cheat sheets. You can get other people to do the work for you. You can hire other people to do all your work, and you don't have to do any of it. And now you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You have to know how to find the smart people for the least amount of money to do the work for you, because it needs to get done, but not by you. So as my two friends, Dan Sullivan and Ben Hardy, both wrote in their book, Who Not How, it's a who problem, not a how problem. It's not how do I do this? It's who can do this for me for the cheapest amount of money in the shortest amount of time. But the school system told us, no, you have to do all this by yourself. So we have to unlearn really 12 to 14, 16 years of propaganda by people who have never built anything anyway.
And it's so true. I just want to add to that before we come to the point of where they take themselves. Again, back to the analogy of the house. So, I mean, I struggle to hang a picture straight. But
so I, do I.
Not for one second did I ever think that it was a limitation for me, or how I would put slates on the roof, or how I would put the stone walls up, the natural stone, or how I would put the large glass windows in. Not for one minute. I got really excited over a period of 12 months about how this home would look.
Well, but how it would look, but not how you would do it.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. Not one second, not one. Didn't give me 1 minute's concern about how it would be delivered. And I think, again, that's a wonderful book, Who Not How. And actually, again, it's part of our program reading material along with the
video. Oh, great. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. So I think it's an amazing concept. Just open that out a little bit. Creating the vivid vision, how does the CEO get themselves to the point where they're unlearning the existing paradigm and put themselves in a place where they've given themselves permission to dream?
For me, it's having a few mantras that I just repeat to myself that become part of my DNA. One is, it's who, not how, right? It's a who problem. Another one is, it needs to get done, but not by me. Right? Like, my to-do list does not say Cameron's to-do list. It's like the shit that needs to get done by somebody else list, right? So it's all about who can I delegate to? And another one is momentum creates momentum, right? We don't need perfect. No one has ever, by the way, asked you for your university or high school grades so the A's didn't matter. The 4.0 didn't matter. The 98% didn't matter. A solid C-, a solid 62%. was good enough, right? So entrepreneurs need to tell themselves it's about sharing the vision, infusing people with energy, you know, helping remove obstacles for people, helping to find good mentors, find good, like, I think the entrepreneur should be at the bottom of the organizational chart, supporting the VPs, supporting the managers, supporting the employees, supporting the customers, making sure everyone is aligned within your core purpose and your core values, inspiring everyone with your vivid vision, but it's helping to grow their confidence and their skills, not telling them what to do. I don't know what to do. I just know where we're going and I think you're good and I can believe in you. So it's challenging the team and growing the team and aligning the team and cheering the team on, not telling them what to do all the time.
If you would you share the story of growing the wonderful business, the 1-800 Got Junk, the story that you share in the book? You know, you went in there, it was a very small company and you grew it to over $100 million by embedding the vivid vision concept, painted picture you referred to at that point. Would you share that story with our listeners, Cameron, because it brings this to life?
Sure. So I joined my best friend, Brian Scudamore, who is the CEO and the founder of 1-800 Got Junk. I came in as his 14th employee and I came in as his chief operating officer. And I helped Brian make his dream happen for his business. Brian was one of the other 16 entrepreneurs who came to that same lunch with me. We went back to my boardroom with another forum mate of ours, Dan, and we all started working on our vivid visions or painted pictures for our companies. At that time, I was running a barter company. Brian was running his junk removal business and Dan was running a manufacturing company. So we were all trying to work on our vivid visions. Brian called his painted picture. When I joined him 2 years later, he handed me the painted picture for what 1-800 Got Junk was going to look like in 3 years. I read it. I still have a copy of it today. I read the vivid vision of what he wore, his painted picture. And I was like, I know how to make this come true. Get out of the way. Let me do these things. And you keep showing us where we're going. You keep helping us drive culture. But I know the things we need to do to make this come true, right? We needed to create a franchise training program. We needed to create a franchise sales program. We needed to create a marketing program, a marketing budget, a marketing calendar, a coaching program. We needed to create internal hiring systems, and I needed to create skill development programs for people. So I saw all the things we needed to build to make the vision come true. And that's what I said about building over the next 3 years was the people and systems and culture to scale that. And then in 2003, Brian laughed, walked up to my desk and dropped what he then called the 2006 painted picture or his vivid vision, dropped it on my desk. And I remember him laughing and saying, I have no idea how you're going to make this one come true. And that's when we were now leaning out from 20 million or 16 million to 100 million. And we did it. We got to 106. And we ranked as the number two company in Canada to work for. We were on Oprah. We landed 5,200 stories about our company. We were operating in 330 cities in 4 countries. That was how we had, I just was excited about reverse engineering. So I didn't know I wasn't even a part of crafting the vision for 1-800 Got Junk, but I was the one who was able to architect the plan to help us get there.
I love that. And, you know, you were the who to Brian's how in many respects in that instance. And point here is if Brian hadn't shared this with you, and I'll give you a little bit of insight to a person that an organizational leader that I've been coaching, and he quite a reserved guy, and we were talking through the potential of him sharing a vision for what he wanted for the future for the organization, and he was quite reticent, quite reluctant to do that. And I noticed, like your backdrop there, I noticed this almost like a vision board sitting behind him, and I said, "What is that behind you?" There's lots of pictures, and said, "Well, really, that's what I'd love to create." And I said, wow, that's wonderful. And who have you shared that with? He says,
no one.
Nobody. How do you expect them people to get excited about this if you don't share it with them?
Well, you know what's funny? So you mentioned the concept of a vision board. Vision boards were popularized in the movie The Secret, and they were popularized by a guy named John Assaraf. And about 2 weeks after I left 1-800 Got Junk in May of 2007, Brian called me up and said, hey, we've got John Assaraf from The Secret coming in to speak to all of our employees. Do you want to come hear him speak? Because we had showed all of our franchisees the movie The Secret. We showed all of our employees the movie The Secret. We watched it multiple times to understand the laws of quantum mechanics and physics to actually bring into the business world. So I went in to see John Ashraf, and in the, have you seen the movie The Secret?
Yeah.
John. Yeah. So when John pulls out the vision board of the house he's living in, so John and I are now really close friends. I went up to see John speak afterwards, and he said, Cameron. And I said, yeah. And he pulled out the corner of an envelope with my name and phone number on it. And he goes, is this you? And I said, yeah. He goes, I'm not sure why we're supposed to meet, but just Jason Abernathy in Washington, D.C. told me to meet you because I was in Vancouver. He goes, can we go for lunch? I said, well, I'm going for lunch with you and Brian and your team. He goes, no, just you and I. So I went for breakfast with him the next day. And that's how John and I became very close friends. Vision boards are very powerful. However, vision boards are for one person only, because what a picture says 1,000 words, right? So right now you can see in my backdrop, I've got, you know, a CEO Alliance logo, and I've got an exit sign, and I've got 3 whiteboards, and I've got some lamps and a brick wall and a computer monitor. When you see that picture, what does it represent to you?
It could be you sitting in a nice cafe.
It could be lots of things, right?
Yeah.
For me, what it represents is I like bricks. Maybe that's all it is. I like the shabby chic feeling of bricks. You're like, oh, I thought it was lights. Nope. Because there's too many things in a picture. Now, a vision board that has 30 pictures on it, now you've got 30 potential misinterpretations. But when I look at this single picture, or when I look at all 30 pictures on my vision board, I know exactly what I'm looking at. I used to have a vision board with some champagne glasses and a dinner table and some people. The only thing that it meant to me was the champagne was illustrating, celebrating. It wasn't gathering with friends. It wasn't fancy restaurants, right? It wasn't even really drinking champagne. It was the celebration. So what I love doing is having my employees take my vivid vision, which is written word that can't be misinterpreted, and thinking about what are different pictures that you can see that would represent certain sentences of the vivid vision that you're excited about. And why don't you create a vision board to represent our vivid vision that you can hang at your desk or in front of your monitor that inspires you? So the vision board is a very personal representation of the vivid vision document, but they're not to be interchanged.
Yeah, I love that. And something you reference in the book is an imagine wall for all employees to add to. Can you share with our listeners the concept of the imagine wall?
Yeah, this again goes back to 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Brian and I walked into 1-800-GOT-JUNK, our brand new offices at night, the first night. We hadn't even moved into the space yet. And we were trying to figure out what we would add design-wise to really make it a strong company culture. And as you walked in the door, there was this huge wall right in front of you. And we weren't going to have a reception desk, so that wall needed to pull people into our culture. And Brian said, why don't we put, like, can you imagine? And all of the things we can imagine in the future. And I said, well, how about can you imagine 100 franchise partners? And we kind of laughed because we only had, I think, 15 or 16 at the time. So we said, yeah, let's put that up. That'll be cool. And then we'll put, like, when they join, we'll put their pictures of them and the truck up on the wall, right? So we can see it coming true. And he goes, something bigger. I'm like, I don't know. How about, could you imagine our logo on the side of the space shuttle? You know, maybe hauling around space junk. And he started laughing. He goes, that's ridiculous. That'll never happen. I'm like, okay. And by the way, it could happen now that we're talking about space junk crashing into the moon. But so Brian said something bigger. I'm like, well, what do you got? He goes, how about, can you imagine being featured on Oprah? And I laughed. I'm like, that's ridiculous. Like, the Oprah Winfrey Show would never cover us. We're only 23 employees. And he started to describe the episode of us being on an Oprah Winfrey show. And I'm like, yeah, put that up. Because when he described the vision so clearly, I didn't know how we would make it come true, but it felt real. So we put that up. And then we had doing waves outside of Buckingham Palace and the Sydney Opera House, and being featured as a Harvard MBA case study, being on Starbucks cups, like our name on Starbucks cups. And we put all these ideas that employees had up on the wall. And then as they started to come true, we put red check marks over top of them. We're now a Harvard Business School case study. We were on 7 million Starbucks cups North America wide for free with a saying from Brian and the name 1-800-GOT-JUNK. We were on Oprah, a great episode in 2003. So by allowing your employees to dream and not worrying about how the dreams come true, it inspires them and excites them.
I love that. A question from one of our mastermind participants this morning was, he liked the idea of the imagine wall, but he posed the question, should should the leaders put some guide rails on what goes up there such that they don't potentially annoy or frustrate the staff member if ultimately the vivid vision which is communicated doesn't incorporate what they've suggested, let's say?
Yeah, so the can you imagine wall, the what's on the wall won't be put into the vivid vision. It's separate. And yes, there should be some guidelines about what you're going to allow to go up on the wall. But the guidelines are they aligned with our core values? Are they aligned with our core purpose? Are they aligned with our BHAG, right? Do they inspire and excite people? Okay, put them up. Because, you know, being a Harvard Business School case study, well, our BHAG was to be a globally admired brand. Well, that certainly checks that box, right? If we were, and, you know, doing waves at the Sydney Opera House, that's a globally admired brand. You know, being on 7 million Starbucks cups for free, that's a globally admired brand. Like everything was able to be checked, you know, core values checked. So as long as your employees' ideas are inspired by your vivid vision, your core values, your BHAG, your core purpose, say yes.
Brilliant.
If you have ambitions to scale with purpose, why not get our new book, Simple Scaling, 10 Proven Principles to 10x Your Business, now available on Amazon. It took a combined 40 years to write and shares with you a trusted guide to scaling success. Just click on the link in the show notes to get your copy. Number of things, going back to the time when you read Brian's, you know, 3-5 page document, his painted picture, how did you feel when you read that for the first time?
I was excited because I saw what I could make come true. I was inspired because I saw the pieces or the components of that vivid vision that I saw how I could make that come true. I think that's kind of what it was. Like I just liked it. You know, I just opened it just for fun because I haven't seen it. It was only 2 pages at the time. I'll read you the opening paragraph. 1-800-GOT-JUNK's vision is one of growth through leadership. Our short-term goal, decided in 1998, is to be present in North America's 30 largest metros by the end of 2003. Our following vision, or what we call our painted picture, is a descriptive image of what 1-800-GOT-JUNK will look like at the end of 2003. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is North America's household name in junk removal. When the city garbage collectors won't take it, 1-800-GOT-JUNK will. And then it goes on and on to describe, you know, monitoring our growth, our image, the media, our systems, training and coaching. You know, 1-800-GOT-JUNK teaches, encourages, and rewards innovation. Corporate team members and franchise partners are trained thoroughly and consistently by following our comprehensive operations manuals and training systems. The team members of the franchise partners are also trained in attention to detail. None of that existed. Like, I walked in, I said, "Where are your manuals?" He goes, "We don't have any." I'm like, "Well, shit, you said you're going to, I know how to write them. Let's do these." So once I was, that's all it was just an exciting, and then his next one became much more robust, right?
I love that. And there's a number of things in that I want to come to. First of all, and I'm sure you've had conversations since with Brian, where did he go to craft that? And where do you recommend that our leaders take themselves to become inspired?
What do you mean by that?
So I always advocate to the CEOs who are going through this process to get out of the office, because the office has connotations of work.
So the problem with writing a vivid vision when you're in your company office or in your boardroom, or even if you work from home and you're sitting at your desk with your laptop, is you tend to get stuck in how are we doing this, right? This is our planning space. This is our getting shit done space. This is our delegation space. It's not our dreaming space. So what I like to do is take a notepad and a pen and go somewhere where I'm inspired, somewhere around nature. You know, I can see behind you, you've got nature behind you. Maybe you go out in your backyard and you just face the backyard and the trees and the forest, or maybe you go out near a golf course or to the ocean or at a lake. Maybe you go and sit, if you're in a big city and you can't go near, go sit in a 5-star hotel lobby by the fireplace. But no iPad, no laptop, no phone, just simply a pen and a notepad, and start dreaming and thinking about the future and mind mapping. So it's by disconnecting that allows you to dream.
I love that. And that's consistent with what I recommend to the CEOs that we're working with. You never Well, that's a general statement, but you typically don't be inspired when you're in the office. I'm typically inspired when I'm out in nature, if I'm going for a run, if I'm at the, you know, near the sea, if I'm up a mountain, whatever. It's always away from the office.
You know, we actually had one meeting room at 1-800-GOT-JUNK's head office. So at this point, we were about 60,000 square feet. So we had three floors, 250 employees at the head office. And we had one meeting room that was called Vision Control. And the only meetings that were held in our Vision Control room were creative meetings, strategy meetings, kind of brainstorming meetings, but there was no planning allowed there. There was no day-to-day meetings allowed there. So it was often empty. People often wanted to go use it. Like, no, you can't use it because you're getting shit done in that room. We wanted the feeling of that room to have its own feeling. It's sometimes why couples don't allow televisions in their bedroom, is they want their bedroom to be a place for, you know, connection.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. An environment in anything, in any part of our lives, is such an important role to play, and especially when you're changing habits. So if you can associate one place, a boardroom, for example, with planning or making decisions or, you know, at times restructuring, then that's not the place you go to dream.
Yeah, it changes things.
Absolutely. Something I want to pick up on is the fact that, you know, Brian had shared with you the painted picture, his couple of pages. Given your experience now across the world, coaching and teaching the Vivid Vision concept, what is the most impactful way for leaders to communicate on the Vivid Vision?
So the first part is to make sure that your rough draft has been passed to a copywriter to polish it and make it pop off the page. This has becomes one of the most important recruiting documents, sales documents, alignment documents, culture documents. This is not simply just an exercise that you're going to share once. So get it to a copywriter. I have a woman, Jennifer Houdet, with her company Conscious Copy, who's helped about 450 companies all over the world craft their Vivid Vision. And they'll, once you have your rough draft, they'll do a few calls with you to ask you more questions, to draw out more ideas, to really, really understand it. And then they polish it and craft it. And what comes back to you is a branded piece that looks and feels like your brand, that speaks in your voice, but really inspires. So your job is to get it to there. Then your job is to share it with your leadership team first, to really ensure that the leadership team understands it, is excited by it, and buys into it. After your leadership team sees it and understands it, your job is to roll it out to the whole company, either over Zoom or in person or both, so that every employee reads through it. And as they're reading through it, they're circling or writing down the sentences that most inspire and excite them. And after you've read through it out loud as a group, each person shares what they're excited with. So in small breakout groups or in their business units, et cetera. I had a CEO that I taught this concept 2 years ago. His name is Dean Gagnon. And Dean rolled out this concept to his whole company. And after he was done, he said, about 15% of you hate what you just heard. About 15% of you don't like what our company is going to look like in the future. And he said, that's okay. Today's probably the right day for you to quit. And then he changed the slide and said, tomorrow, I want you all to go to this address. We were offsite, by the way, at a curling club. He said, tomorrow, go to this address, because today, when we've been offsite for the day, a moving company came and packed up our entire company and has moved us to our new office space. And he started showing photos and people were like, what? And about 15% of the people were terrified. And within 6 weeks, 15% of his company had quit. And a year later, Dean ranked as the number two company in Western Canada to work for. The number one company, Nurse Next Door, was another client of mine that I was coaching. But Dean was so comfortable with the vision that he was okay with some people quitting, because he knew it would magnetize the people that were staying. So when you're rolling that out, you have to watch for who is the cultural cancers, the toxic people, the people that aren't bought in, because you need to get them to buy out, right? You're either on the bus or off the bus.
Yeah, totally agree. And what would you say to leaders who fear that process, that, you know, they're conditioned to look at the last year's results and extrapolate up by 8 or 10% for the next 3 years? What would your advice be to them?
Well, are you really trying to make what you have just a little bit bigger, or are you trying to lean out a little bit further into the future and design something? So I was a reference for Elon Musk and Kimball Musk, Elon's brother, in their very first round of funding in January of 1995 for their first company, Zip2. prior to Elon building PayPal with Peter Thiel. I knew Elon when they had one employee. Elon has an ability to dream at a different level. Now, when he acquired Tesla from Martin Wright and Eberhard, he didn't start Tesla. He was an investor and bought it back and then decided to build it. They already had a Roadster. They had the electric vehicle prototype already done. Elon understood that he didn't want to make that car better and faster. He needed to design something else. He also didn't want to make the Prius better and faster. He wanted to design something else. So he leaned out and designed the Model S. Right. I remember taking a group of 12 CEOs from Vancouver down for a tour of SpaceX, and we were walking through SpaceX with Elon, and at the back of the building, we saw something covered in a drop sheet, a painter drop sheet. And we asked him what it was, and he said, it's the new Tesla. And he made us put all our phones down, and he took the drop sheet off, and we saw the very first Tesla Model S a couple of days before the media saw it. And we were just like, what the fuck? This is unbelievable, right? It's because he wasn't trying to make what he had better. He was trying to design something that would fit his body. He's 6'5", so there's lots of legroom and headroom. It had to fit his five boys. He had twins and triplets. So it was actually, the Model S had a 7-seat option. It had the 2-seat jump seat. It had to be sleek and fast, like his McLaren F1. And it had to actually be priced that it could actually be purchased by Middle America. So there were different tiers of the Model S, right? The P, like, so he understood how to reverse engineer something. And then he said, who wants to help me build this? And people were either like, hell yeah, or no way. That's how you do it. That's why you do it. That's why you have to be okay with polarizing. You know, like, what am I showing you right now? You can see what I'm...
Your iPhone.
My iPhone, right? So when Steve Jobs rolled out the iPhone in 2007, what was missing?
The keyboard.
The keyboard, right? Everybody in the world thought, no one will ever buy one of these. There's no keyboard. And then we heard someone typing and we said, can we try that? And then we tried it. We're like, I want one. Like, I need to have one, right? And then all of a sudden, BlackBerry is like disco. You know, disco used to be cool. BlackBerry used to be cool too. It's gone. Because he didn't try to make a BlackBerry better. He tried to make something completely different.
What would you say to the leaders of SMEs who are our audience, who will say, well, that's okay for Elon Musk. You know, you've an exceptional character who we're very fortunate and privileged to have known within our lifetime. But actually, I'm running a small engineering business and I'm just stuck in the business. I don't see how this concept is relevant.
Well, remember, I met Elon when he had one employee, and he described a mapping company before I understood the, I had to be a reference for their funding. When I didn't understand the internet, and he was building an internet company, right? So I was willing to put my name on he and his brother because Kimball used to work for me. So like, I'm just saying, try it. Prove me wrong. Try it and draft it and get a writer to write it and roll it out. And if I'm wrong, I will be blown away because I've yet to be wrong. This has worked with garbage companies. It's worked with house painting companies, with auto body. It doesn't have to be a sexy industry. What has to happen, though, is that your employees, customers, suppliers, potential employees, everybody can see what you can see. They can all help you make that come true. Or try it your way and bang your head against the wall. But I've seen so many entrepreneurs are like flies trying to bang against the window, right? We've all seen flies going to try harder. I'm going to try harder and get out that window. And the fly keeps trying. And what do we see 3 days later? The fly is dead on the windowsill, 1 foot below where it was trying all. So keep banging your head against the window. Maybe it'll work for you. Or Maybe there's a door right over here. And if you go out the door, it's an easier way.
What you've described, I'm smiling. It's the first page of Price Pritchett's book, U Squared. And he describes that being in a motel room where the fly is banging out the window. It's so profound. And it's a book that I recommend to everyone.
I was given U Squared by my boss in probably 1989. It's a booklet. It's a tiny little, it used to be red. I think it's silver now. It used to be red. It had one of the most profound impacts on me. It's time to go back and reread that because I don't even remember some of the lessons from that book, but it was a really, really strong, where I got the fly concept back then.
Essence and thesis of that is about quantum leaps, changing your existing paradigm. You know, what you've referenced is, you know, if you do what you've always done, hence you're stuck in the balls of the business, then you'll get what you've always got. What we're advocating here, and certainly what you assert in the book, Cameron, is look, create a vision of the dream company you wish to work for and work in and lead in the future, and then reverse engineer from there.
And by the way, I'm literally, as you're doing this, sending myself a note to buy. I'm going to buy copies of the book U2U² for all of my franchise or all of my members of our CEO Alliance. It's that strong. So I'm literally ordering it once I'm done our call.
We have it as part of our program material as well, alongside the Vivid Vision, because I think they both really complement one another. So you referenced something earlier in terms of the document, the Vivid Vision that you create is something that you should share. And just elaborate on that, Cameron. Some of the challenges that I face when I suggest that is that, well, what about our competitors? And do we share this with our suppliers? And kind of, so can you share with the listeners your experience of who that should be shared with?
So the competitors can't create your culture. Elon has been very clear on what he's building. Steve Jobs has been very clear on what they're building. Like, everyone knows what they're building, but they can't recreate the culture and the DNA. And everyone's so worried about their own strategy that they think you're crazy anyway. By the times your competitors actually see what you're doing, it's already too late. So everyone knows what I'm building with my COO Alliance. And yet no one's actually trying to do the same. And if they did try to do the same, great, because then we'd have more groups for COOs. You know, I'm trying to build the world's leading organization for the second in command. No entrepreneurs are allowed to join. Yeah, I share my Vivid Vision of the CEO Alliance, and yet nobody's out there trying to build one.
Yeah.
And we just keep growing, right? With 1-800-GOT-JUNK, we were very clear, and now they're almost a $500 million company. So when you're not sharing how you're going to make it come true. You're just sharing your vision. But everyone only sees you at today, so they don't think the vision's going to come true, and they don't realize how focused you are on that flywheel of that vision.
There's huge talk at the moment about the war on talent. And I think that the stat from North America, it was certainly from the US in November, was that 4.5 million people left their jobs. How important do you feel the Vivid Vision is to share with potential talent? And just to simply put it out there, let's say have it downloaded on your available to download on your website.
Oh, it's critical. When you share your Vivid Vision with your potential employees, they're going to start to figure out how to make it come true for you, right? So when you share your Vivid Vision, so the way I use it is anytime someone applies to work for me, they automatically get an auto reply that says, thanks very much for your resume. I'm not going to read it yet. Please read the Vivid Vision of our company and what we look like, act like, and feel like 3 years in the future. Please read this recent article of us in the media. And then send me a 2 to 3 minute video of why you want to work here and how you're going to help us make the Vivid Vision come true. I only then watch the videos of the people who submit. And if I like their video, then I'll look at their resume. But I'm not going to read the other 80 people's resumes and waste my time. And I've now reversed the sales process. And I've got the candidates already selling me on why they want to work here before I've started the interview. Now I can grill them like crazy through my 2 or 3 stages of my interview. And I can hire anybody I want. I actually cover this in my Invest in Your Leaders course on the one of the 12 modules, the interviewing module, how to reverse that sales process. And the Vivid Vision is a key part of that.
Has there been anything that's pleasantly surprised you that you hadn't captured originally in the book that has come to your attention, given your coaching of the Vivid Vision in the last 10 years?
One was something my sister created, which I think is extraordinarily powerful. So I've always seen every sentence of the Vivid Vision as a future state project. You know, what one or two projects should we do to make each sentence come true? So what she did is she took her leadership team offsite for a day and they brainstormed on all the projects to make every sentence come true. And then they decided to vote on which projects to do. And then they decided which projects to do in year one, which projects to potentially do in year two and year three. It's like building a dream home. You can't put the fridge and the stove in on day one. You have to build the foundation, right? And you can't put the floors in on week one. You got to build the foundation. Like, so you spend a lot of time building the foundation and putting up the walls. So she came up with a project list of all the projects to do in year one, and then put all the projects into fourth quarter, third quarter, second quarter, first quarter. And the team was then inspired to make all these projects come true because they knew which sentences would come true. And then every quarter, she took a Word document version, which I've told people to use, of her Vivid Vision and highlighted which ones are true in green, which ones they're working on in yellow. And over quarter by quarter, she started seeing come true. But I like her project list of the projects to make sentences come true. That was powerful stuff.
Yeah, I love that. And it's very much aligned to a process we take our participants through to deconstruct their BHAG into the three-year vivid vision, into a one-year plan, and then look at four or five key themes or projects mm-hmm. within that three-year vivid vision that we can break down into a one-year plan, look at four or five key projects that we can undergo then with goals, so and really get granular then and look at 90-day OKRs to create cadence towards those. So
all of those systems work so well as long as they're aligned with the vivid vision of what we're building.
Absolutely.
Right. And what ends up happening is we end up trying to make decisions on what projects to do, but they're not necessarily aligned with the direction, or we don't really understand why we're saying yes to them or why we're saying no to them. This allows everyone to understand why we're saying yes to specific things and why we're saying no to specific things. That's where some really strong power comes in.
Absolutely. It brings me back to the Japanese proverb that a vision without a plan is just a dream, but a plan without a vision is chaos. So
yeah. And Thomas Edison said, vision without execution is hallucination.
Yeah, there we go. In closing, Cameron, but just before we close, I'm conscious of time. The last hour has absolutely flown. It would be remiss of me. You mentioned Elon Musk as a friend and his brother, Kimball. What do you know of Elon that you feel characterizes his brilliance? And is there anything we can learn from what he does on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis? Is there anything the leaders can learn here who are listening in terms of how Elon conducts himself?
Oh, for sure. There's a few things. So one is he stays outside of the box and allows himself to dream at a level that most people won't dream. So he doesn't worry so much about the day-to-day how. He continually thinks about where we're going, the vision, right? And he shares that vision with so much conviction because he lives there. He lives in that future. He shares that future with everyone with so much conviction that they buy in or they leave. If they're bought in, they're so excited to help him build it. The second thing that he do is he continually learns. Like, he's obsessed with learning and reading and growth, right? So there's that. And then I think third is he's really, really great at hiring great people who can make his dreams come true.
Yeah, I love those.
But he's done that from the very beginning, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, people view SpaceX as something that's already baked. You know, again, you know, he knew nothing about rockets before he launched SpaceX, but communicated his vision for that with such vigor and such passion and such inspiration that I believe, you know, the roles that he advertises within that company now within in Silicon Valley are the most sought after roles. I'm really inspired to work for him.
Well, and I'll say something that is attached to that. Because of COVID, the world is now very flat. And companies that are based in the Bay Area are hiring people that are based in your city. In every city that anyone listening to, the competition is now hiring, and they'll hire someone based in the city that you're in to work for a company based in San Francisco. They no longer only hire people based in San Francisco. So your company needs to be better. It needs to inspire more. You need to grow your people more. We didn't spend any time talking about my Invest in Your Leaders course, which is fine, but I believe our job is to grow our people and inspire them. So if you inspire them with where you're going and you grow their skill set using stuff like Invest in Your Leaders, then they can help make your dreams come true. But if you don't build a better company, someone else is going to attack and hire your people. No one's going to work for an average company anymore.
That's so true. And one of the huge benefits of Zoom and the technology that has emerged from COVID is the choice that we have as leaders in terms of the access to talent, as opposed to thinking that, oh, well, our talent is now available to others. It's an opportunity now with an inspiring vision to attract people from across the globe into your business, because we're totally all very used to working remotely. So anything you want to share in closing in relation to your program, Cameron, and on the Inspire Your Leaders program?
I think instead of going on the Inspire Your Leaders, where I'll go is that none of this actually matters. This is just what we all do to make money. We're all going to die. This is just what we're doing to make money and have fun along the way, but we need to enjoy ourselves and laugh more and have a good time. And remember that our employees are struggling with something as well. Every single person that works for us or with us is struggling with some of that human condition too. And if we can care about them as people, if we care more about them as people, they'll care about our company more than we do. But if we only care about our company and we're so serious, our employees understand that they don't matter as much. So it's just really caring about our team and having fun along the journey, because we're all just walking each other home.
I love that. And you've actually taken me to our closing. And I always ask our guests for three timeless takeaways. So, you know, is there anything else you want to add, given?
Okay. So considering I wrapped with that first, I'll give you one timeless takeaway. I believe that all of our employees are climbing up two ladders. Their left foot and their left hand are climbing up the skills ladder. Their right foot and right hand are climbing up the confidence ladder. And we have to grow their confidence and grow their skills and grow their confidence and grow their skills. So the reason I launched the Invest in Your Leaders course, it's $750 per person. If you're not willing to invest $750 in one of your employees to grow their skills and grow their confidence, why do you have them as an employee at all? Why would you not spend $750 on a $70,000 employee? It makes no sense why you wouldn't put 1% into growing their skill set, right? So grow your people's skills and confidence, I think, is timeless. Another one is to remember that we don't have to be the smartest person in the room. We just have to know where they are. We have to connect with them. And then I guess a third would be as Jim Collins said, to focus on the critical few things versus the important many. You know, there's so much busy work that we can be doing, but what are the critical few things, the flywheel, that will, if we focus on those things, will give us more momentum. Momentum creates momentum. So it's just by being that monomaniac with a mission.
Love it. Cameron, as ever, it's an absolute pleasure to chat with you. If people want to connect with you, where's the best place to reach you?
Sure. So the investinyourleaders.com for sure. And then my CameronHerald.com website. If they're big enough, if they're doing 5 million or greater in revenue, they should absolutely get their second in command into the COO Alliance. And then all five of my books are available on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes as well. And then check out the Second in Command podcast too.
Brilliant. And look, I wish you all the very best with everything you're involved with. Well, what's next for you? What does the vivid vision look like for Cameron Hurled?
My fiance and I are getting married in Greece in May, and we are traveling the world. We have sold everything. I'm in the process of getting rid of everything in our last house in Vancouver, getting rid of that at the end of April. And we're global nomads. So we're all over, mostly going to be Europe for the next probably year or so, but we're going down to the Seychelles, going to Kenya. We just came back from Antarctica last month in Chile. We were in Antarctica, Patagonia, and Chile. So it's seeing the world, exploring the world, and remembering to just have fun while we're doing it.
Wow. Well, look, congratulations on your impending wedding, and I wish you all the very best traveling the world. And if you're back in Sligo in Ireland at any time soon visiting the relatives, please ensure you give me a call.
Well, it'll be my shout. I'll see you there for sure.
Good man. Cameron, thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks, Brendan. Take care.
So there you go. Another episode of ScaleX Insider. As ever, I want to thank you for listening and sharing your time with me today. If you've enjoyed the show as much as I have creating it for you, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And while you're there, why not subscribe to the channel so that you never miss a future episode? It really helps me and the show and makes it easier for others to access our content. And if you want more information about how to scale your business, you can now get a copy of our new book, Simple Scaling, 10 Proven Principles to 10x Your Business. The link to the book will be available in the show notes. I look forward to sharing my time with you again on our next episode. Till then, take care.